You'd kind of mentioned last night at the meeting with the Economic Club that torrent of legislation that you'd signed, kind of all the work you guys put in the first 6 months. We kind of wanted to structure this like a Q&A, and I guess just to start, one of those acts, the Emergency Financial Manager Act, is the how it's been dubbed at least. I guess there's been a lot of criticism. One of our sister papers in Houghton recently wrote a series kind of about the pros and cons of that as people see it. How do you answer the criticism, I guess, that that law places too much power in the hands of unelected officials?
Well, let's stop and talk about the situation with the emergency manager law. First of all, there's been an emergency manager law in Michigan going back to the Blanchard era. Mm-hmm. And that with respect to the managers out there today, I've only appointed one of several managers that they were already in place. And when I looked at the legislation that previously existed and how it had been operating, there were two major areas that needed improvement. One of those areas was there was no early warning system. So before you even get to the question about local powers and everything else, it was actually set up in not a good way, in the sense that until the crisis truly happened, there was very little the state could do to help a community. Mm-hmm. So what we did is we put in an early warning system to say, now we can work with communities, so they're still in charge, but we can partner with them, we can help them do reviews, we can help them do consent agreements. There are many positive things we can do, because my goal is to ever avoid having a financial manager show up. Mm-hmm. The best answer is never to have to need it. So now we can work with communities to get them to avoid the situation to begin with, where we couldn't do that before. That's a huge improvement. Mm-hmm. The second piece is where there was an emergency manager situation, is they tended to be there a very long time, because they weren't able to fully do the things they needed to do to get in, do their job, get out, and get the local community back in charge. So the second piece of the legislation actually enhanced some of their abilities to do them with a number of safeguards, with a number of things that needed approvals from various levels and a process to do those in. But it gave them more power to deal with the situation, so they could be there for a shorter period of time to be more effective and to get the community people back in charge for their community. So in many respects, I view this as a positive enhancement to actually enhance the ability of local governments to be more successful.
I think some of the perception, at least when that law first entered the books there, was that there would be a torrent of financial managers that would be appointed throughout the state. That didn't happen. Has your crew had any involvement in those early warning signs? Have they been involved in some communities prior to installing a financial manager?
Yeah, again, we've only had one situation, and that was a replacement of a financial manager with Detroit Public Schools. So we've had no situations where I've announced there's a new financial manager needed in a community, because we've been having discussions with communities that are having issues on how to help them work through those things. So I view, in a lot of ways, we're making this work in a very positive construct. It is a challenge. One of the things that caused some of the criticism, it was really interesting, and it just shows the broken culture we've had in this state, is we actually did some training for people about the legislation and about how to manage communities that are in financial trouble. And that was criticized, where the way I viewed it is, wasn't it smart to be proactive before you need emergency managers to have more consultants, more people that are financial experts, and have actually local government people go through training on how to deal with difficult situations, rather than to say, we're not going to do any training, we're just going to ignore this and wait for crises to show up?
Right.
So, in fact, we were working on being proactive instead of reactive in a constructive way to give communities, again, better tools to succeed. So I think we're on the right path. It's just unfortunate that some people have tried to misconstrue it and make a negative out of something that's a positive.
Mm-hmm. I guess sort of connected there, you've shared sacrifice is something that you've said many times in the last few months. You've conveyed the message in the past to some of the school districts, some of the universities that are complaining about these cuts that they've faced in the last year. You've conveyed to a sense that if they can stick with you through this, you'll help them out in the future. Things will get better in the future for everybody. I guess now, what's your plan for the immediate future of public education? Where do you see that going?
Well, again, I did say I want to be able to invest more, as we looked at. One of the things that we did that was new is we did a two-year budget process. One was the legal year that was approved by the legislature, but we showed a second year. And in that, we showed that if we made these cuts this year in these difficult circumstances, that we wouldn't have to make additional cuts, given the economic outlook we were addressing. So in many respects, hopefully we have reached that bottom point that at some point in the future we're going to be able to invest back. We need to do it on a thoughtful way, though. It's just not about spending money. It's about actually making sure we have performance metrics, good transparency, and we're achieving real results. But I want to make sure we get back and focus on the kids. The priority of our broken educational system needs to move from spending money to making sure our kids get a great education.
Okay. So I guess at this point, that plan that you laid out initially, you kind of see that as still coming to fruition?
Yeah, we publicly reported that. That was part of my budget message. Mm-hmm. It's actually in the budget, and it's there.
Okay. And I guess moving on a little more to the tour that you're currently on, I know tomorrow you guys are heading out to Cliffs, mm-hmm. To Cleveland Cliffs, and you mentioned how mining is important, how the timber industry is important to the UP, to Michigan, kind of that international exports you were talking about last night. Despite environmental concerns, some of which have been voiced to your office, I know, Kennecott's Eagle Mine project is moving forward out in the Yellow Dog Plains. I talked to Dan Wyan about mm-hmm. this a couple weeks ago. How do you feel specifically about that project?
Well, mining in general is an opportunity for the UP to do well, and it needs to be done in an environmentally conscious fashion. Mm-hmm. And I'm proud to say Michigan put in the toughest regulations in the country on mining. And the issue then, given that we created that environment and we're going to follow through and make sure those regulations are complied with, people should be allowed to mine. Mm-hmm. Again, that was decided in a very public fashion. All parties were invited to the table. It was a broad dialogue. We made a decision. That was a good decision. Let's respect that. Now let's put it in practice the right way and allow people to follow through with their projects while ensuring they're being responsible from an environmental point of view, and we're providing our fiduciary duty. It's a great way to create more and better jobs. It's part of the heritage of the culture up here. Mm-hmm. Let's just be the best at it in the country and the world.
I guess you kind of talked about permits and legislation mm-hmm. and things along those lines, how that process is held up a little bit from time to time.
Yeah.
How do you balance in a case like this? How do you balance environmental concerns and economic progress? I mean, what kind of advice do you give the people that you put in place?
Yeah, well, to give you some background, I actually was a board member of the Michigan chapter of the Nature Conservancy. I was term limited out, and I really enjoyed that experience because it gave me a perspective in terms of in the environmental world, and it's really a balancing act. It's really to balance economic interest with good science and good ecological concerns. So it's really taking those three things together to say, how do you put them in the right perspective to understand we want a sustainable world. I want a great world that's good for us, for our kids and generations to come. At the same time, we need to exist in that world, and one of the things that tie together is job creation. Because too often people treat economic development and the environmental world as two separate silos.
Mm-hmm.
That's a flawed model. The economy and the environment are tied together in a symbiotic relationship. Because if you stop and think for a minute, what's one of the key things if you want to create jobs? It's having great quality of life. It's having great recreational opportunities. It's being able to go out in the woods and enjoy them.
Mm-hmm.
So it's important to have a strong environment to go with a strong economy. At the same time, if you want to do preservation, you want to do programs to help the environment in a positive, constructive way, you need dollar resources to do that. And how do you get those dollar resources? It's by having a thriving economy that's generating either tax resources or private giving. By having that be successful so you can invest to make sure you're doing the right things by your environment.
Mm-hmm.
So it's one big circle as opposed to two separate silos.
Okay. And also, I guess, on the environmental ecological mm-hmm. Line, the Moose Hunting Advisory Council in the UP was created under state law to make a determination on a possible moose hunt. It would be statewide, and it seems like they're poised to suggest a hunt where 10 tags are handed out statewide to be hunted in the UP. I guess, do you think a moose hunt is a good idea, and why?
Well, again, that's where I'm looking to the moose hunting experts. Again,
mm-hmm.
they're balancing the issue about making sure we have a thriving herd of moose, and at the same time, are there ways we can do the proper things by both the economy, by the moose, and by the environment? And I think they're doing a thoughtful review of that. If they come out with a positive answer, I'll be supportive of it. It's just like the question of deer hunting in our state.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, deer hunting can be a very positive thing for our deer herd in terms of making sure it's a healthy herd, that we're being thoughtful about it while still watching a herd hopefully grow and do well.
Okay. Does that mean you're going to be applying for a tag if there's a season?
I've always been a fisherman more than a hunter.
Not a moose hunter, huh? Okay, and the last question, basically, that we had on the Q&A. AARP and some other groups are arguing that the state's new tax law, the new tax on pensions, I guess, that was signed in May, is unconstitutional. Oral arguments in the Supreme Court, I think early next month, are slated. I know there's a lot of factors here, but kind of what's the status of that debate? Where do you expect that to go?
Yeah, well, I believe it's constitutional. In fact, we made a request to the Supreme Court to expedite hearing of the legal issues, and they accepted that, and I appreciate that. Because I believe we have a very strong case. The Constitution supports our arguments, and it's the right thing to do for the long-term interest of all our citizens. The issue there was is we were essentially have created a tax system, and with the old system, that was going to gradually over time put more and more an undue burden on our young people in relative relationship. And when I campaigned around Michigan, I heard it over and over again. After jobs, the next most important issue is how do we keep our kids in the state? And you don't do that by creating a system that unduly taxes your young people. And it's only asking people to pay tax when they have the ability to pay. So this is about fairness. And this is about looking out for our kids for the long term in a fashion that we're still understanding that people may have fixed incomes and such, and they'll only be asked to pay where they have an income level of sufficient level where they have to pay it. And we've got a very long transition before it even applies to those people.